Yo, 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 hey, 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 we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy and with yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. Good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are. Thank you for listening to your boy. So, as you know, we got to be intentional and deliberate with everything that we want to do in this life. So I'll tell you two things. One, that I started this podcast, the Dialogue Heavy Podcast, to be able to share my stories with friends, family, and fans. And two, hopefully, you know, garner the attention of the people that can help me share my stories with the world. And that's what we're doing. So today we are continuing with the story of Nun, N-O-N-E, which happens to be about a nun, religious, who gets nun. Or maybe she will. We'll see. But, yeah, we're on the journey of Sister Edna, a nun, who is having these incessant thoughts about sex. And she wants to have sex. And she is having a problem because she's a nun. And it's against her religious beliefs. So, in the first chapter, now we're going into her journal entries. These are her personal journals that we mentioned in chapter one, where she is talking about these instances and what's going on in her life. And in the first part, the last episode, she had went into a confessional at a different church, not hers, and she had talked to a priest about these situations. And if you haven't listened to it, go and listen to it. And if you have, you already know what happened in that situation. She broke out of there, went home, was completely conflicted about the whole situation, took a shower, and essentially had an orgasm off of the water. So it just shows you how sensitive and how ready she is to do this thing, and she's, you know, fighting with that. So we're going to get into journal entry number 251 today, which is next up, and she's going to be talking about other things. So we're just going to go on from here, and we're going to go from there. So without further ado, I bring to you journal entry number 251 in Nun. And as you know, everything that's been on this podcast, the Dialogue Heavy Podcast, has been written and recited by yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. So here we go. Journal entry 251. I yelled at Matthew McConnell yet again for teasing Gretchen about her freckles in third period social studies class today. He's a short, stout, redheaded boy of Irish lineage who loves to tease the girls in class because he's secretly in love with them. Why do boys do that? I don't know, but for girls, it's a hard concept to grasp when the boy who supposedly likes you pulls your hair, throws paper planes at your head, or trips you so the whole class can see you fall straight on your face. It's weird, and it's flat out rude, but who knows why people do what they do, let alone kids. Matthew is all right, I guess, and my class was usually a good class. A group of well-behaved eighth graders just trying to figure out who they are and what the hell is going on with their changing bodies. Now, unfortunately, we share that sentiment, but they have age as an excuse for their mental meltdowns and raging hormones. I, on the other hand, do not. As a sister of our father, Beach Sainthood, I wasn't completely sheltered from the dealings of adulthood and all the activities that come with it, but because of the age I entered a life of devotion to God, there was a lot that I did miss. Now, my first crush was to a bad boy named Neary, who I first noticed while playing hot potato in the fourth grade. He had long blonde hair that was more luxurious than the models in the L'Oreal commercials, and his glorious smile gave way to his double-layered teeth fighting for room in his mouth. He was the definition of a novice alpha male by the way he dominated on the handball court. Same on the tetherball court, and he was the undisputed champ in freeze tag. I stalked his every move and watched as he hawked spitballs in class and initiated food fights in the cafeteria with impunity for a year, and I was addicted to him. Now, he never even knew my name, let alone how I felt about him, but I still fantasized about making out with him under Mr. Oberman's oak tree all the same. But it never happened. Not there, and not with him. Oh, but my day would come. A few years later in band class, of all places, and of all people, with the only black kid in school. I had a crush on LaShawn ever since he showed me how to properly clean the spit out of my trumpet in the sixth grade. But by the time we did what we did, we were in the eighth, and my likeliness for him had only grown tenfold. Of course, he was different in the looks department in comparisons to my usual crushes, but I think what we most shared was the feeling of being outsiders. Like me, nobody talked to him, and he was picked on most of the time for his skin color, his kinky hair, and his large lips. But I loved those lips, and I wanted them on mine. We only talked about music and only in music class, but I believe in his eyes there was something more. There wasn't mine. And I wouldn't let a little thing like shyness get the best of me like it had in elementary. I laughed at his silly jokes that weren't even that funny and pat his back whenever possible, giving him a lingering rub at the end. And no matter where he sat in class, by the time he was done setting up his instrument, when he looked up, I'd be sitting right next to him. Then one day, when Mr. Thompson was out sick, there was a substitute in class who didn't know or care of the normal protocol, and I decided that that was the time to take our relationship to the next level. I lingered in the instrument closet and noticed that he did too that day. Our classmates were completely oblivious to my intentions, and LaShawn might even have been, but I waited patiently as the rest of our class gathered their sheet music and stance and exited out the door. Next, I closed it. And I watched through the window as the other students prepped their instruments and knew we were in the clear then. LaShawn was at the other end of the closet, rifling through the music folder, and that's when I made my move. I pulled over the footstool and climbed it, reaching high for a trombone that was easily accessible from the floor, and my uniform shirt rose enough for my navel to show, and I acted out my best damsel in distress impression to grasp LaShawn's attention. I breathed out, moaning, "Can you help me?" "Oh, hold on," LaShawn said before dropping everything. I peered down at him from my underarms, and he was already at my legs, admiring my short skirt at his eyeline. And the nervous swallow he took during his endless gaze let me know that I had him. I was nothing short of terrified, of course. But the little monster inside of me pushed to go for what I wanted for 2 years. I dropped down into his arms on purpose, with my trumpet in hand, and he caught me like I planned, and we hit the floor. Even the big brass instrument between us couldn't stop us from rolling around like the kids on the wrestling team. I gave him a peck on the lips, as the momentum of the fall gave me the leeway to do so, and his eyes widened so much that I wasn't sure if I'd made a mistake. But after a breath, in which I can smell his strawberry Pop-Tart, or I can smell the strawberry Pop-Tart that he had for breakfast, he kissed me back, and the next thing I knew, I was tasting the strawberry Pop-Tart that he had for breakfast. Our tongues rolled and our lips smashed into each other's. Our teeth played a bad game of bumper cards, and the metal of his braces serrated my lips. My fingers got stuck in his hair while he grasped for handful upon handful of ass that I hadn't even fully grown into yet. We were lost in that little closet, doing things I'd only fantasized about in movies, and things that I was told only adults could do. My panties got wet, although I didn't have to use the restroom, and LaShawn's hard instrument poked my leg. The whole ordeal was scary and sexy and freeing, and then lonely. And what felt like a split second, I realized I was doing all the kissing. "No," I thought, trying to catch my rhythm, our rhythm again. My tongue reached and searched, my hips grinded upon his bony pelvis, but nothing was there. God damn it. I thought I didn't want to stop. I wanted to keep going. I wanted to keep this feeling that I was feeling. Something inside of me was building and growing into a destination and I was yearning to reach, but LaShawn's tongue stopped moving and his hands were not on my backside anymore. And when I woke from this physical fantasy I was in, it looked like we both just lost a one-sided boxing match. There was blood everywhere, and LaShawn's white polo was varying shades of pink and red. I jumped up immediately and looked into the reflection of my trumpet, and a vampire stared back at me. "What the fuck?" I thought. Physically, I was fine, but otherwise, I was scared to death that I killed this kid with a kiss. What happened? He said. I don't know, I told him. And then, with the euphoric feeling between my thighs fleeting and the agonizing pain of my lips rising, he asked, what do we do? We look like the Night of the Living Dead. I panicked, and I looked around the room at nothing but metal and wood, and the sheet music wouldn't do. I told him, put your hoodie on, I told him. Okay, he said, unwrapping it from around his waist. Now, you leave out the room first, he told me, and I'll go in 5 minutes. It must have been your braces, huh? Are you okay? I'm fine, he yelled. What's your problem, I told him. We shouldn't have done this. We're gonna get in trouble. Well, you shouldn't have kissed me. You shouldn't have. Damn it, you should have thought about that before you kissed me. You kissed me first. What? It doesn't, look, it doesn't matter, he told me. If we get caught, I'm dead. What? Just go, he told me. All right, I said, before storming out of the closet. I sat in my seat in class without even looking to see if anybody noticed LaShawn in my little soiree. I hadn't even thought to rid my face of the Count Dracula-style massacre I looked like until I was in the girls' restroom after class. I was fuming. For the rest of that day, and it didn't help that every time I put the trumpet to my lips, it felt like someone was putting hot coals inside of my mouth. And all of a sudden, the moist underwear I had to sit in for the rest of the day, for the rest of class, felt cold and gross. I didn't appreciate feeling shamed. I wasn't a whore. Can you even be a whore at your first kiss? That day went from being my most memorable to my most miserable in 2 seconds, and I never wanted to see LaShawn again. We never spoke after that, and we wouldn't even have known what to say if we did. Instead, on occasion, I would catch him staring at me from across the room while he played on his instrument for the rest of that year, or he would catch me. But our inability to talk didn't stop me from replaying it in my head constantly for years after. You would too if it was the closest thing you ever had to consensual sex. I'm sure the Catholic guilt was the gist of our reasoning. That, and he was black and I'm white, but when that chapter ended, so did the extent of the only real love life I ever had. And boom! So, that is Journal Entry 251 in None, N-O-N-E. And I will continue to make these journal entries of Sister Edna doing her thing. And we're going to see just how everything goes in this story, man. So I thank you for listening. I hope you liked it. I hope you loved it. I hope, you know, and if you didn't, I hope you, grasp something from it and learn from it. So thank you for listening again to another episode of Dialogue Heavy with George Truly. I am Michael Anthony McMillan. You can reach me at The Griot. At Michael the Griot, excuse me. And my email is mzzack199@gmail.com. And I will catch you guys later. Peace!